This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Grant and Danny radio program comes your way each and every day on The Fan, brought to you by our friends, the law firm Kondori & Murad. They will help you to update your last will and testament. They will set up a living trust for you or your family. Need a medical power of attorney? They are your guys. They're our buddies. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. The Beltway Blitz is just 55 minutes away. We'll cover the Terps with insider Jeff Ehrman. What's going to happen with Kevin Willard? Also, the Capitals with John Walton. Alex Ovechkin needs 6 goals still to pass Wayne Gretzky, and he's only got 10 games to do it. And the Nationals, after their home opener yesterday, opening day at Nats Park, was a lot of fun. Mark Zuckerman, massinsports.com. Nats fans showed out yesterday.
Thought it was awesome.
Sellout, which I didn't anticipate. 42,000 fans. I get that the home opener being on opening day does give a little bit more of a boost. But the last couple of years, and specifically remembering last year, which I think last year they opened away from Nats Park in Cincinnati. And so you come home after that for your home opener.
Mm-hmm.
Not being on opening day, it's going to water it down some. But that was the best first game atmosphere at Nats Park I can remember in several years.
It's
certainly
been a minute. Yeah, I remember
during this rebuild. Like post-pandemic,
right.
This was the best opening day vibes I've seen.
Yeah, there's the qualifier. So for me, I'm trying to remember the year. They all run together, the different years. But there was a Mets home opener when they ended up losing, but that was electric and so much fun. When it's a division rival, it's a little bit more spicy too in that regard. Made honestly, like people are going to be louder responding to Phillies fans who are known at times, maybe brace your ears, to instigate a few things and to maybe let their presence be known, even if nobody asked for it. So that kind of helps the buzz. I thought the park was great yesterday.
Before we get into the Commanders win total that came out, how about the interaction I had with the Phillies fan sitting next to you yesterday? If that doesn't just explain everything, right? I mean, give people your recollection of how it went.
Okay, so I'm not trying to, which story are you talking about? Because there were plenty. You're talking about the guy that,
the guy that sucked the worst, that was like a section over from us.
Yeah.
You and I were talking about him.
Mm-hmm.
And then the quote-unquote good Phillies fan turns around and engages with us.
So, yeah, I'm hanging with a couple people. We're by our red box for the better part of the afternoon. And, conversations are happening. And good Philly fan, I put that in quotation marks, turns around and inserts himself.
Oh, you interacted with that guy already?
Yeah, dozens of times. Now, you'll notice I didn't reach out to him and ask him for any information or take. But he was very friendly, but just volunteered things.
So I wasn't there earlier. Right. I had no idea you guys had already interacted.
Oh, yeah. There was just constant. You know what it's like when somebody, a couple rows in front of you, does that full body slash head turn around like, actually, like you tried to actually me
you're
a number of times.
You're eavesdropping on it, my conversation.
Yeah, so I get that something maybe said that is inflammatory to you or you don't like or it's incorrect. And, I mind my business and carry on living my life. Not this Philly fan. So he had a lot of information for everybody, even if it wasn't asked for or whatever, but fine. Perfectly pleasant enough guy. Yeah, so he turned around a number of times. But the time in question that you're talking about was, I think somebody did a bit, or so I can't remember how it started, about Philly fans, and I'm basically pointing out this one guy who, is what you think of. When older people think of young people, when they're like, this younger generation's so annoying, that's the guy they
it's
think
him.
Of. A couple of earrings.
This is how it started, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Phillies had just done something, and he was standing up, like leaning over the row in front of him, yelling in the face of a Nats fan. But he was just very annoying with how he, and you're like, this guy, by the way, stinks. And I'm like, who? You're like, this guy right here. And we always do a thing. We don't point at people. We do like an opposite our finger.
Mm-hmm.
So I start turning around toward the concourse.
No. I'm like, actually pointing this way.
No, this time I'm actually pointing at the guy.
That guy stinks.
So I'm looking at him and I'm like, oh. And it took me 20 seconds of just watching how he handled himself, carried himself, talked to
people. You knew right away, didn't you?
And I said, my comment to you, now this is me talking to my buddy, who I spend more time with than I do my wife.
That's right.
Who I work with 4.5 hours every single day, mm-hmm. and some time before and after that, right? Just me and you having a conversation.
That's right.
Sitting next to each other. We are shoulder to shoulder at a baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, he is the fan from the Phillies fan base that gives them a bad name. When you think about why people hate Phillies fans,
mm-hmm.
my point to you was most of them are pretty good. It's that guy. They have more of that guy than everybody else,
yeah,
unequivocally.
They have a higher percentage.
They just have too many of that guy because they've gotten comfortable and it's kind of celebrated within their fan base in a way that it's not. I don't think the good fans tell that guy to shut up and put him in his place enough. I think they kind of put them on a pedestal more than some. I don't know why. But I said to you, this is the problem for the Phillies, is this guy is the one that gets the headlines. And then this dude in front of us spins around, and he's like, he's got a whole spiel. He's now lecturing me on, and he's the good one. He comes in peace. That's the, like, this is supposedly the ceiling is this guy. Not a very good ceiling. You know what I mean? Because he even said, like, hey, I'm one of the good ones.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you guys, I'm one of the good ones.
As he's yelling at me about how the take is wrong, the national media take is not true.
Yeah, it's like it's 90-10. It's
as
not.
He's doing this, a Phillies fan 10 rows down, this lovely lady who says she's an usher at Great American Ballpark.
They have different
way.
Kinds of ushers, I guess.
Turns around and flicks off the entire section, so the supervisor has to go over and tell her, please stop flicking everybody off. And she says she works at a ballpark, and we're allowed to flick people off in Philly. And they tell her they're not allowed to flick them off here.
They're like, hey, please don't do that. And she's dismissive and
but
rude.
This guy's like, it's only not 10% of our fans. You guys focus on that 10%. And I'm like, yeah, bud, we do, because it's pretty outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
But also, for most fan bases, it's not 10%. Or if it is, your 10% is louder, is more noticeable, is more obvious. Like, it's not my fault that I don't like that guy who's ruining everyone's time.
Mm-hmm.
It's his fault. We need to get back to blaming the people that are the jackasses.
There you go. And by the way, it's respectfully to actually guy from Philadelphia,
right,
or wherever he's from. It's not 90-10. It's more than that.
I don't know what the percentage is. I am leaving open the possibility that it is 90-10. We went to the Link, albeit in club-level seats, probably mm-hmm. the most expensive seats you could have, because our good friends, the law firm, Kandori and Murad, take great care of their pals.
And Captain Hooked.
When we are on the road. But we're in the club level at the 50-yard line. You're not getting a whole lot of riffraff trying to throw up on little girls there or throw batteries at Santa Claus. We had a great time. Everybody was so nice to us. It was lovely, right?
Yeah.
I think there are great Philly fans.
I'm sure there are, yeah.
I believe that.
Definitely are.
Whether it's 10% or not, I think there are more dummies from that fan base than any other. And they suffer fools more than most of us do. That's my take. I will die believing.
Yeah, it's a very simple thing. It's glamorized. To them, it's a badge of honor, which is a trait of somebody that's like doesn't really fit in well with society. Like we've got there's an inherent desire for people to get along, right? I mean, there is it, for the most part.
It's so true.
When you are antisocial and antagonizing purposefully, you are therefore out of step with the rest of us. And what it should be is, no, let's be correct. It doesn't mean you have to be a sheep and wear the same color and march in line to eat your gruel three times a day. This is in Soviet Russia in the 80s. What I'm saying is, when your whole point, and you think it's funny to antagonize others to such a degree, and you celebrate that, you are now different than the rest of us, right? You're worse. And they're worse.
But nobody checks them, it feels like.
But that's my point, because it's celebrated. Yeah. Where any reasonable fan of a different marketplace, there are bad apples everywhere. We know that without question. Some of the worst incidents have had nothing to do with Philadelphia fans, right? Fights in parking lots and different things. That is inevitable. There are terrible Washington fans and New York fans and Detroit fans, terrible fans everywhere. What we are able to do is go, oh my God, that's awful. I can't believe that happened. They're going, ha, 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 ha. Dude, there's John again. He went off. He probably was hammered. Wrong. But that's who they are. But anyway, so this Bama, I mean, this D1 goofball, this chotch, this absolute you-know-what goofball stew is the pits and the worst, and it took 7 seconds to figure it out. Where if I didn't point, you would have gone, is it that guy? I'd be like, that's it. You win. You win the prize. But anyway, what was the point of starting this?
But what I said to the guy was, I said, but you don't understand, man. I sit in these seats every single game all year long. I'm here for every series. When the Diamondbacks are here next week, there will be no interactions like this. He's like, well, the Diamondbacks don't have fans. We're more passionate. Okay, sure. Not one single person likes the Diamondbacks or will be.
Yeah, there's a larger volume of Philadelphia
when
fans than our Diamondbacks fans.
There's a great rivalry between mm-hmm. the Orioles and the Nats. When they're here, when the the Dodgers fans who will overtake the ballpark. There will be more people wearing blue than wearing red at the Dodgers-Nats midweek series a couple weeks from now when Shohei is at the plate. Everyone will whip out their phones and will hit two bombs and have six exit velocities over 110 in three games. There will not be a single interaction like what I've seen three of in the three innings since I've sat down here with Danny before we do our postgame show. That's a you problem. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not a me problem. It's only 10%. You guys focus on it too much. I'm sorry. Maybe you should just figure it out as a fan base. How do we weed those people out of here? I don't remember. I think I was just saying the atmosphere was great.
Yeah, and like, ultimately it was.
The ballpark was alive. People were excited. It was loud. I want to talk about all the booing of Bryce Harper. It was the loudest booing of a player in that ballpark that I've heard.
Maybe since ever. Bryce Harper?
Honestly, maybe ever. Because they haven't had, like, maybe an opening day before the pandemic with the Phillies, if they had that. I don't know if they did. It was just good vibes all the way around. It was really, really cool.
It was fun. Yeah, overall, great day, except for, you know, coming in second and whatever. But it's a long season. But I thought everything from start to finish for the Nats was really, really nice. I thought pregame, all that kind of stuff was well done. I thought all the ceremonies and
that
stuff was good.
What I really enjoyed is they had the original season ticket holders from 05 at RFK Stadium. Which was, I mean, if you guys sleep on what a dump of a baseball ballpark that was.
Terrible place.
Everybody knew this is where you have to play for now.
Mm-hmm.
And this is such a makeshift operation until we get a real ballpark in a few years. But for season ticket holders who were waiting for decades to opt in, I mean, you had to wear it as a fan. And so to have all of them on the field shaking the flag and, you know, forming basically a high five line.
Kind of like
a
long
players,
gauntlet. Yeah, it was great.
I thought that was well done. The intros were very good. Interestingly, Dylan Cruz is the biggest star on the team by far.
I know.
More than James Wood.
Yep.
James Wood, who's the local guy from D.C., who's the higher ceiling, you know, future superstar. Now, Wood's, you know, got a chance to hit 40 home runs when it's all said and done in his career. Cruz is just a different player. He's awesome. He'll be a captain in the locker room type guy, and he's going to be a really, really good ball player. But I didn't think it was particularly close. I thought Cruz got the biggest ovation.
Biggest pop. So do Sean Doolittle one.
Yes.
And Dylan Cruz, too.
Maybe Gerardo Parra, too.
Parra, yeah. Parra 2A or 1A.
If you won a World
or
Series and are still around, you get a really nice ovation.
Yeah, you graduated to you know, a little bit pudgy coach. They're in.
Brandon in Fairfax, you sleep on pudgy. Doolittle is ripped right now. He's been in the gym.
Hey, shredded, Brandon. Yeah.
Hey, Bob.
What's up, bud?
Hey, how's it going, guys? I think your number is a little off between 90 and 10. When I was in Philly for the NFC game, I would say for every 99, there was one fan that was like, hey, we got to play somebody else. So it was rough, man.
Where'd you sit?
We were way up.
Oh, you're in the nosebleeds?
Hanging out with the common folk.
Yeah. That's
probably the only ticket I could have afforded for that game if I went in the stands. So I understand it. But I don't think you could pay me enough to do that. Because sitting up there with the unwashed masses...
Yeah.
I did it
once at the vet as an in shape, you know, like fairly like an idiot, but a fairly confident individual. I said, I'm never doing that again, ever.
Yeah,
that's not a toughness contest, dude. I'm supposed to be enjoying this. I don't want to sit there like
now.
I'm in a self defense class.
I do it all the time. You always joke about me being on the glass from time to time, but I still will at Capital One Arena. I'll go up and sit in the 400s for hockey games. I have not this season. This is like the first season I haven't.
Mm-hmm.
But for playoff games, recently, I've been up there.
Yeah.
I will sit there. I've had my back to the wall at Capital One Arena for games, you know, last season several times.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem doing that. Absolutely not. I think it's harder for Wizards games. I just don't think the visual is as good for basketball that high.
At Cap One, I don't like it for basketball. Yeah.
But hockey, I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're like lower 400 level, if you're near the first few rows, I think that's as good a seat as there is in the house.
I sat in one of those for one of the Islanders playoff games back in the day when the best of seven.
Who's
the game went seven?
Game winner?
I think so. I don't remember. I think it was, you know, game three, game four. I can't remember, whatever, was at home. And I kind of looked around a bunch of times and go, this is actually a great view for hockey.
It's the best.
Because if you don't care about individual characteristics of players, I know this is going to sound weird. I don't have a better way to quantify it than this. For basketball, I want to see faces, head fakes, you know, I want to see where someone's eyes are darting or, you know, a no-look pass or whatever. And hockey, less important to me because they're all so uniform with their helmets and stuff on. So you could see the formation of plays and, okay, this guy is skating ahead, so maybe there's a through pass coming.
Right.
Or you could see the forecheck. You could see the line change. Things develop and you go, this is actually, I don't want to say a better view, but a unique way to watch it.
I think most road NFL stadiums, and I separate NFL because the tailgating just means alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a drunkenness that leads to people acting sillier and goofier and tougher than they normally would. because there's no tailgating. You know, you don't think about it. You don't really see fights at a Major League Baseball game. I mean, I shouldn't say that.
They happen.
That's probably number two.
But there's so many games.
Basketball and hockey, where like you're getting off work, you're getting over to the arena, you're throwing on a sweater. There's no alcohol being consumed before you get in. You almost never see melees, fights, whatever, in the stands. Basketball and hockey. You'll get one or two a year on social media or something. Same thing for baseball, although they certainly have those, and it's dangerous at times when it happens. But football is where the fights happen mostly.
Mm-hmm.
It's the weekend. You've been drinking all morning. You go into the stadium. And I say all this to say 400 levels anywhere, maybe you're dealing with a little more of people that are willing to give you a hard time. I remember when I was a teenager riding up to the Meadowlands with my best buddy, and we watched the Giants-Redskins game at the time. Wearing our Chris Cooley jerseys and had things poured on us and dumped on us at the end of the game. And people were jerks the whole time. Like, when you sit up there, you kind of know what you're opting into.
Mm-hmm.
But the only place I would refuse to do it is Philly. Cincinnati, you know, this year they're going to Kansas City and Minnesota and Miami. I would sit up high for those games and watch it. I think there's some good seats for football. But Philly, not enough money.
Yeah, it's a no for me.
I'll just, my high-definition television's 90 inches. My chips are crunchy. My Cola Classic is warm. We don't want it warm.
Why would you want it warm?
I meant to say cold.
The hell is wrong with you?
No, I apologize. I have warm soda. That's what I want at my house.
What?
What I like to do is I like to get a bottle of soda
and leave it out.
Put it on my windshield until it gets nice and warm in the sun.
You ever do this?
And then drink it.
Shtick aside, you ever do this?
Yeah.
You ever leave it out on the counter and take the cap off so it gets flat too?
Oh, flat and warm?
Hot flat soda?
Now we're talking.
Okay.
Now that's what
There's
I want.
There's a good time.
Grant and Danny on the fan. Who is going to be the final eight standing in the NCAA tournament? Who's going to cut down the nets? And is Kevin Willard leaving today? We will talk to a college hoops expert, covers the sport nationally for The Athletic, next on Grant and Danny. Craig Lachlan has made the announcement that he is ready to return. We will tell you when Locker will be back in the booth. We'll play the audio of his big announcement coming up in 15 minutes on Grant and Danny. Beltway Blitz at 4. At 4:30 today, we're going to play a game for tickets to DC Defenders action over at Audi Field. We've got 2 4 packs of tickets in the good seats for you for Sunday afternoon's game. Should be a blast to get out there and watch some quality spring football. The defending champions in the league are in town to take on the Defenders. So we'll give away those tickets with a fun game at 4:30 today on a Hair Down Friday on Grant and Danny. But right now, let's get to the Rude Guest Hotline and welcome onto the show somebody with much-needed insight on our A topic of the day. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. And it's fitting because a very rude thing was done,
well done
by Kevin Willard, the head coach at Maryland. We made it all about himself a day before his team played in the tournament. And now Scott Docterman, who covers college sports for The Athletic, joins us to talk about his future. Scott, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How's it going today?
Doing very well.
It's fine, thanks.
So let's start with last night's game. Let's talk basketball first. Maryland kind of ran out of gas there against the number one seed Florida in the second half. No shame in their game. They made a run, but what'd you make of the tilt?
Yeah, I thought it kind of played out the way I expected. I mean, Florida's depth is amazing. They're efficient at both ends of the floor. They're one of the best teams in the country in that way, and that's how it kind of played out. I mean, their bench scoring outscored Maryland 29-3. Maryland has a great starting five, which we expected, but just not much on the bench. And, you know, Derek Queen had his typical great game, 27 points, but, you know, just to try to corral six players that were in double figures and that just, you know, hitting 50% from the floor. It was just too much for Maryland to go against Florida. And I think Florida might be the best team in the tournament. We're all talking about Cooper Flagg and, you know, potentially tonight with Auburn and of course, the high-scoring affair that Alabama and BYU had. But I think Florida might just be the best team in the tournament.
Maryland out-rebounded opponents over the course of the season. I know that's everybody, but even in conference with that rough-and-tumble Big Ten, they did that. What the hell happened in that regard? I cannot remember a disparity like that, with the exception of one game I played as like a 10-year-old, when like the other team had like a 6-footer with a mustache, and he got every rebound. But other than that, at that level, I was stunned by that, Scott.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. I mean, to see what it, you know, almost, I mean, more than doubled them up at 42-20. And again, that's just where they are. And then, I mean, surprising in some ways. I mean, they were number two in the SEC in rebounding margin. Maryland was fourth in the Big Ten, and the Big Ten's a very physical league. But they have size, they have depth, they're great. They're coached so well. They're in the right positions, and then they can run when they're in there. It's a really tough team to play against. And then you look at the way that they shot the ball. I mean, when you make half your shots, it's really tough on the opponent just to get into those kind of positions. And you know, some of it involves a little luck, but not a lot. I think in this case, 15 offensive rebounds for the Gators. That's just, you're giving up second chance opportunities on a team that doesn't really miss anyway, and that's too much. So I wasn't surprised Florida won. I thought that Maryland had, the guts to hang around for a while, which it did. It was just when you get in that last 15 minutes and you don't have the bench that they do, then that's really hard to keep up.
Scott Docterman covers college sports at The Athletic. Is Kevin Willard going to Villanova?
Well, at this point, you better. I don't know why you could come back, and I don't know what the advantage is. I mean, to kind of torch the entire college and the system around you. And I mean, maybe he's just too honest, and that's entertaining. And college basketball coaches are way more honest than their football counterparts. But for him to kind of talk about all the details surrounding Maryland and what it doesn't have going into the tournament, and then making that an issue, it kind of took away from the Sweet 16 run. And this is the first time in 9 years Maryland's gotten there. Maryland is a jewel basketball program. It is one of the bigger ones in the Big Ten because it's mostly a basketball-first school. And yet for this to happen at this given time, I mean, I thought it just took completely too much focus off what had been an amazing year. I mean, last year they didn't get – I mean, what, they had a losing record last year, and for them to finish second in the Big Ten and play as well as they did and have one of the most dynamic freshmen in the year, probably outside of Cooper Flagg, the most dynamic freshman of the year, and to have all that focus off the team, I thought it was just disingenuous. And again, maybe he was just too honest, and that's good for us, I suppose, in media, but at the same time, it really took away from what was an incredible accomplishment this year.
Well, it unequivocally did, and the press conference was absurd. But I found it interesting that he was asked last night, would you have done anything differently about the last couple of weeks? And he said no.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? I mean, ADs leave all the time. ADs get fired. ADs quit their jobs. They go to other places. And for him to kind of make it like, Damon Evans is a great guy. I've had dealings with him, and he's going to probably do a nice job at SMU, but he's not like somebody you'd say is the greatest AD in the world or anything. I mean, he's, and you're going to find somebody else there, and somebody else is going to take over. And if, I don't know if his end goal is to kind of shame the fan base into spending more on NIL, or if it's to even worse, try to shame the Maryland Athletic Department, which is just, really in tough financial straits, because they're still not fully integrated, invested with the Big Ten financially, because the entire time when they were an unvested program until the 2020 year, they were borrowing at the rate of almost $125 million in total. And some of that got forgiven. Some of it was more grants, but they're still not invested until 2027. And you're talking about a program that overall has the fewest ticket sales out of any of the public schools in the Big Ten. They make less on their overall tickets than even regional teams like West Virginia and Virginia, let alone say an Iowa or a Michigan State that make, more than double what they do off their overall tickets. So I think, if you're trying to push some sort of envelope with Maryland, I think that's really weak to try to do that. You should try to build it rather than tear it down. And so at this point, I think the only option for him is to go to Villanova. I just don't think that Maryland deserves that, because what happens next year if it doesn't quite work out, or if the football team's terrible or something like that, you're going to have less revenue coming in than you even did this year. And it's going to be hard to keep up. And it's like you're blaming somebody else for your problems.
Scott Docterman with us here of The Athletic, breaking down the Maryland situation. Scott, you kind of touched on it. It's the paradox, right? When Maryland, I'm not telling anything you don't know, but when they leave the ACC with this declaration, we are a football school. Like, I've declared myself a male model. Doesn't make it so. You know what I mean? Like, it has not happened. I don't know that it ever will. And that shortage or that lack of, you know, funding or whatever from the school, I don't know how much that's going to change. I couldn't believe time and a place right there, right? I mean, at some point, I know I've lost a lot of the luster and the illusion that this is actually about kids and developing them and the like, as these guys can go NIL wherever they feel like. But there's still a mentorship role of the coach dealing with 18, 19, and 20-year-olds. There is some semblance of that left. I couldn't believe he chose that time to you know, pour the kerosene and light the match, and then people seemed to cheer for it for a little while. Just what did you make of that reaction kind of initially to it?
No, I thought, again, I just think it was just terrible. I mean, I understand, though, that, you know, maybe he's frustrated. Maybe he's talked about these issues and it hasn't gotten anywhere and he chose to do this. But this is the wrong time for it. I mean, in college basketball, it gets pretty much overshadowed until March, especially with the expanding college football playoffs. It really doesn't get a lot of relevance until a minimum late January. And so for you to do that at this time, when everything is pointing in this direction, when your program has momentum, when there is a heavy interest in you, and the fact that people are looking at Maryland as possibly not only a Sweet 16 team, but as a team that, you know, maybe if they pulled an upset here or there could get to the Final Four, and to take all that and just toss it aside early on, I thought that was just really the most surprising thing I've seen in March in a long, long time from a coach. And yeah, you know, and Maryland can declare it's a football school. That's, I don't think that'll ever be the case. But I mean, they rank last in ticket sales in the Big Ten when it comes to football tickets. They make $7.3 million, according to the last amount of money that I've seen. And you compare that with, again, like Iowa, which is almost at $23 million, or Michigan State, which is at 19.6. You can't compete internally for that. And then you're talking about NIL. Well, instead of running it down and what you don't have, you should try to find ways to say, hey, we're a rising program. Look at us right now. We're really building something special. Last year we struggled. This year we're doing well. We're here. We're number 4 seed. We're coming. You know, support us. Get on our bandwagon now. Instead, if you hop this at effect and you lose your AD, it's just going to make it that much more difficult for people to want to support you.
Scott, so let's think basketball specifically here. Fill in this blank for me. Maryland is a top blank program in America from a coaching standpoint. Where would you put them?
I would say if there's little stability at the top, I think it's a top 20 program. I think it's a top 4 or 5 in the Big Ten. It's proven that. It's won a national title within the last 25 years. It has great crowds, great support in that sport. I've been there. I've covered games there. I've seen it electric. I think that it's got a chance to be a really solid upper-level program, and if you get the right coach – and the right stability around you, it could be top 15 to top 10 on an annual basis. But the problem that he did by kind of torching all this is, now that there isn't an athletic director, and if he goes to Villanova, who's going to look at that program and say, wow, I can really do something with
that's
it?
That's the other
problem. I hadn't thought of that. That's a good point.
To me, it was the most obvious thing as soon as it became clear that he was leaving is, you're talking about how terrible this job is and then leaving the job. So anybody that's considering the job is going, wait, they don't let us stay for overnight at Christmas. They don't do this. They don't do that. So let me go back, though. You say it's a top 20 job in America, potentially. That's high, like, I would have said maybe top 30, you know, top 25 or something. Yeah. But obviously, when you look at the conference, you put Michigan State above it, right?
Mm-hmm.
What else? Sure. Like, Wisconsin better than the Maryland job? Michigan better than the Maryland job?
Maybe. I would put right now, Indiana is still a blue blood. You have to give it, even though it hasn't played up to its expectations, it makes, you know, 50% more in ticket sales than any other program in the Big Ten. And Illinois is number 2. So I think you throw in an Illinois, an Indiana, a Purdue, a Michigan State as really probably the foursome that is, I would say, above an Indiana, above a Maryland right now. I would put Maryland in with the football schools like Michigan and Ohio State, Wisconsin. The West Coast is a little odd because, like, UCLA has incredible tradition, but the revenue isn't that strong, believe it or not. And I would say I would put it above an Iowa or a few other schools like that. But then again, Maryland is more than capable of getting elite talent. It has a great recruiting base, an incredible history, a passionate fan base. So it's got all the elements that you need to have success. You just need that stability. And I mean, by taking a torch to it and on the biggest stage, it really devalues it. And then if he goes back, if he's able to go back and try to coach this team, I mean, you really hurt your ability to retain your fan base and make them excited about it again. And then you're going to have every other coach working against you. It's like, why would you go there? They don't have money. They don't have this. They don't have that. They make you go home instead of staying in that extra night on Christmas. I mean, I just think it was really shooting from the hip is fun sometimes, and that's probably something that you could talk with reporters about on the side, but don't ever do it in a press conference in the suites at the NCAA tournament. It comes back to bite you.
Yeah, listen, 24 hours before you tip off. And by the way, here's all the dirty laundry. Scott, thank you, buddy. Really appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. Thanks so much.
Scott Docterman on the Terps, College Hoops, here on Grant and Danny. Craig Lachlan's on his way back to the booth. When will he make his return after open heart surgery? He made the announcement on his social media just a few minutes ago. We'll have that for you next, and we'll get you a double play on the Fan. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on the Fan. We will get you a double play in just a moment. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports, but we have been waiting to hear when we'd get to watch Craig Lachlan back in the booth with Joe Beninati calling Caps games. We were hoping he would come back in time to get to call Alex Ovechkin's record-breaking goal if it happens at the end of this season, and that is most certainly going to be the case. Locker, for those of you that don't know, had to step aside after finding with a medical checkup some issues in his chest, and had to have open heart surgery and has been recovering. And I mean, initially just, you know, getting out of a chair is difficult. Now he's running around and sprinting, and he's back, and he is ready to be back in the booth as well. This is Craig Lachlan on his own social feed.
Hey, Caps fans, I've got some updates here. It's been 7 long weeks since my operation. I feel fantastic. Lots of working out, lots of heart rehab. And that means my return is right around the corner. I can't wait to get back in the booth Sunday against the Buffalo Sabres. I feel I'm ready, I'm energized, and I'm ready to get back in my seat next to Joe B and all my great teammates in Monumental Sports. It's been a journey for sure, and I couldn't have done it without the great support of the fans, the Capitals organization, Monumental, and my family, of course. I think I'm ready. I'm off the IR, and you've heard it here first. I am back.
Let's go, Locker.
Is there a wall nearby I can run through? Hell yeah. He remains the best.
Yeah.
The best.
He played and gave everything he had as a player to this organization, and he has been on the call of 99%.
Mm-hmm.
Of the thousands of Capitals games that so many of us have watched over the years. My earliest Caps memories are him. I mean, Craig Lachlan saying, "Joey Junot," in a really funny way. And his voice was kind of the first thing I found out was hilarious about him. And he's just kind of a character. And then as you get a little older, you read about someone, you learn about their career. And I've gotten now the pleasure to get to know him and his family. And I worked with his daughter very closely for several years doing pre and post-post. And know the whole group pretty well. What a guy. He is just a mensch, and he's hilarious, and nobody cares more about the Caps and enjoys what he does more. I'll say this. As I get older, I think that's one of the things I like the most. People who like what they do. Like, I've even told our guys over the years, I'd rather someone who's never done it before work with us on our show that is happy to be here.
Just wants to be here.
And just is willing to learn and try and excited. Like, this is not digging ditches, man. This is not a bad gig. I would rather work with someone every single day who's just like sports and wants to be around and wants to try some things than a 30-year professional who's going to complain and be a energy suck the entire time.
You got to find joy in what you do, and he certainly does, right? Even if it's the other team, he can't help it. He can't help but teach. He can't help but explain. He can't help but share with you how it happened, right? And there's still a zeal and enthusiasm, even if he's delivering the bad news. You know what I mean? Where it's like they get the puck deep on the forecheck, jaw, tic-tac-toe, beats Chucky Lindgren. I learned that. I learned what they did. I learned how they did it. Right. He delivered it to me. He's not excited about that, necessarily, that it went against the Capitals, but he's like, I found joy in the way that they played that hockey thing, that they did that, even if it was though to the team that I call the games for. The knowledge, the prep, one of the coolest things I ever saw, a kaiju-sized board that he has, like Godzilla's forehead size of a board that he has when you go into that suite for the broadcast type stuff. Joe B's got his own stuff, and you know he's an encyclopedia too from 7 miles above the surface of the earth where the press box is there at Cap One Arena. But Locker's board with the nugget that he's going to pull out at the right time with that little bit of info on a bit of a cold streak because this guy hasn't scored in his last 7 games, but he's been lethal on the power play, blah, blah. Incredible.
Well, they're the perfect pairing.
They're great.
In so many ways, it's the odd couple, too. Mm-hmm. Like, Joe B, dressed to the nines.
Dressed to the nines.
And Locker always looks good, but he would probably just as rather, you know, wear a hoodie. Joe B, his idea of going out on the road to eat is a steakhouse with the nicest glass of wine they have.
GP, here's some Merlot.
Locker wants to go eat wings at a sports bar. Yeah. And then calling the game. Joe B is the wordsmith, and Locker's getting, you know, tied up and making zings on... You know, calling everyone their big rig. They're just perfect together. It's so fun. And I've missed Locker dearly like the rest of you have. So he will be back for the game this weekend on the 30th.
Such good news.
So welcome back, Craig Lachlan. It is time for our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. Presented by your local Washington area Honda dealer. Stop in for a great deal on the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today.
I've been sitting on this one all week, GP, since Monday. Monday. That was like a month ago, it seems like, in terms of sick days and different things going on.
That was before you were out for a bunch of days.
Before the time before time. You and I did the show from the Lieutenant Commander Worf, if you know your Star Trek. And we, for whatever reason, like I was kind of in a hurry because there was a rain delay, and then there wasn't a delay. Then it was like, oh, crap, we're going to do the show right now. So everyone hustled over. I found a parking spot on the street right down there by the Lieutenant Wharf. And it was a 4-hour parking thing. And I go, oh, I'll be able to extend my parking time. That was my understanding reading the sign. Turns out I misread the sign. So from 5 p.m. basically until 6:30 p.m. when the show closed, I was vulnerable. I couldn't extend the parking time. I tried to see if I could go move it. There are no other parking spots.
That was amazing, by the way.
I didn't have time. The whole thing, I was feeling terrible already.
You cared enough about the parking spot that like during a break, potentially missing some show, you're like running out there to move your car. It's one of the craziest things I've ever seen.
I didn't realize it, but I already started the flu. I was feeling terrible at that point. The whole thing was a mistake. I felt terrible. No ticket. The first time in Washington, D.C. history.
They are slacking.
There is no municipality in the world better at ticketing you. D.C. don't do much right. In fact, they can't do anything right. Just ask them to have sports gambling where everybody makes millions. They can't do it. But they'll get you on that ticket. They'll ticket you behind.
They will.
They'll have someone hovering over there, and the instant, ding, ticket time. Not me. Not this time. 90 minutes, I got away with it. For the first time in my adult life, I got away with a parking violation.
Good for you.
I'm so thrilled about
it. Attaboy, Danny.
Me one, City 77.
The Beltway Blitz is next on Grant and Danny, the teams in town you care the most about. We've got those tickets for the D.C. Defenders on Sunday. We've got 2 4-packs. We're giving those away about 4:30 today on The Fan.